This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, a good Monday to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Yeah, it's getting there in the NFL, isn't it? Where we're starting to make some real analysis of what we're seeing from teams. Yeah, we know it's quirky. We know this league and the playoffs, things can happen, things that you don't expect. But we are in December, and we're heading into the stretch run, and now we're making some bold statements about what we saw in Week 14. Like, for example, the Dallas Cowboys may be the team to beat in the NFC. Now, I get it. San Francisco's really the team to beat in the NFC. And the Eagles are falling apart because they've lost back-to-back games to these two teams. But the way the Dallas Cowboys are playing since losing to San Francisco has been remarkable, where they have really blown out people at home. And when they don't, they find ways to win with the confidence of Dak Prescott. And that was on display yesterday. And if you go to the AFC, we're watching a team that has been so dominant for a while start to spiral downwards, and that is the Kansas City Chiefs. This wide receiver problem has been an issue for them, but you always feel like Patrick Mahomes might just be able to overcome it. That in the end, the raw talent of the quarterback, his unbelievable fight to stay in games, fight to win games at this time of year would benefit them. But they were facing a Buffalo Bills team yesterday that was desperate for a victory. Everybody needs to be 7-6. If you are hovering in that wild card, you need to be 7-6 right now. If you are 5-8, you are out of this thing. You are not getting back into this picture. You're going to need a massive stretch run to get back into this picture. And the Bills were at 6-6 entering the game yesterday, and they needed to win. And they needed to win in a place they've had some success. They've won their last two games at Arrowhead. In fact, they played five times. Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen played five times prior to that game. And Mahomes is just 3-2 against Allen. So the Bills know they can beat Kansas City. One of those losses came when they tied the game with 13 seconds remaining. So that being said, in the playoffs, Kansas City and the Bills were in a dogfight. And for the Bills, it was a dogfight really for their playoff existence. They need to stay relevant in a large group that is now in the AFC. Well, the play of the year got nullified because of a call, because of an offside call on Kadarius Toney. Once again, Kadarius Toney costing a team something, whether it's dropping passes. And again, it's not just him. Marquez Valdez-Scantling had that drop pass, if you remember, a couple of weeks ago. The wide receivers for the Chiefs have been real problem. But it was after the game that I think was really telling. Mahomes has finally had it. But I don't think he's had it with what he said he had it with, which was the officiating. I think he's really upset at his wide receivers. I think this thing is getting really, really old. Denver is now breathing down their backs. They are just 8-5. I know just 8-5 sounds ridiculous, but they are, if the Miami Dolphins win tonight, that is two games back of two teams for that number one seed. And this means Patrick Mahomes is going to have to go on the road in the playoffs. And I think he can sense it that his wide receivers continue to make mistakes. Look, does Patrick Mahomes want to live in a world where there are no penalties? I don't think so. Does he want to live in a world where penalties are called based on the circumstance of the game? I don't know if he really wants that either. I think it was just a man completely and utterly fed up with everything around his offense being centered around a position group that's not that good. Because I think a day later, look, I'm never going to fault an emotional person saying things at the podium at the end of the game. I've been to hundreds of these. I get it. There's supposed to be a cool down time, and a lot of guys do use that cool down time, but some are still seething from the game. I think his frustration with the officials, it's real in a way. I mean, he said, look, offensive offsides, we never get that. Like, that's never called. Like, I haven't seen that called since I was in seventh grade. And the reason why is because when a player is lined up at the line of scrimmage, the officials will say, hey, back up. Wide receivers especially, when they look down the line, they will look to the official, am I good? And the officials help them out. They help them out with defensive plays. You'll see officials go to the coaches and say, hey, your defensive lineman, their head is over the football, get him back. They really don't want these kind of calls, these little ticky-tack calls, to affect the game. So they're really working with both teams to try to get those players to be on the right side of the football. right? Lined up in the neutral zone, mostly a defensive penalty, not necessarily an offensive penalty, because again, receivers are trained to look at the official to see if they're okay. But what did the officials say at the end of this, which nullified the play of the year? The pass to Kelce, who then threw the backwards pass to Tony, who ran it in for a touchdown and gave the Chiefs the lead with just a minute and change on the clock. Is that Tony didn't ask. And the other thing was the officials noticed he was so far off the ball that they said, nope, we're not even going to give him a warning. That is so egregious that we're not even going to give him a warning. Now, this might have drove anybody crazy. I think Patrick Mahomes is legitimately correct that this is the kind of thing it is and called. The problem is this. If you rewatch the play over and over again, the flag is thrown in the middle of the play. The flag is thrown as the ball is in the air. This isn't a call that nullifies the play of the year after the play of the year. It was a penalty at the time the ball was in the air. They threw it almost immediately. Okay, they had no idea Kelce would catch it. They had no idea Kelce would back lateral it or back pass it to Tony, and they had no idea he would run it in for a touchdown. This is my biggest problem with this argument. And again, I get it. I am in my living room watching it on TV. I don't have a dog in the fight. I'm taking my emotion out of it. I'm not Patrick Mahomes on the field screaming my head off at officials, yelling about my frustrations with a whole bunch of things as we slither down to 8-5. And by the way, the Broncos are breathing down our neck. So I get it. Him and I are going to be in two different emotional states here as a neutral observer rather than somebody on the field. But when people say things like the officials need to let them play, then we all have to accept that. And I mean it. We all have to accept that. It just can't be let my team play. It can't just be let my team get away with stuff. You're going to have to accept, if you want to live in a world where this exists, you're going to have to accept that another team is going to commit absolutely egregious errors and penalties, and they're not going to get called because the game needs to flow. Kadarius Toney was offsides. We may not like it as guys who really were entertained by the play and entertained by the game. Did it ruin, again, the play of the year? Sure did, but that's Kadarius Toney's fault. That is not the official's fault. I said this at the end of the Super Bowl. I get it. I know we are dying. We are an entertainment culture. We need these games to be entertaining as well as circumstantial valuable, right? Meaning the end result is valuable. We crown champions. We crown divisions. We make playoffs. We formulate MVP decisions. We have all of this in one side of it, but we also want to be entertained. And that play is entertaining, and it doesn't count. It doesn't count. And oh, by the way, the next time they try something like that, it's likely that somebody is going to be like, just hang around Kadarius Toney and Marquez Valdez-Scantling in case Travis Kelce decides to throw a backwards pass again. So, like, you ruin this opportunity to see something absolutely amazing and thrilling for a ticky-tag penalty. And I completely get it. I completely get it. But where is the line? Where is the line? Right? We always say you can call holding on every play. Well, they don't call holding on every play, right? So are officials now supposed to learn time and circumstance? Do we want that? Because where again is the line? 5 minutes to go, 10 minutes to go, all of the fourth quarter? How about all of the second half? How about all of the first, second quarter, half of the second quarter in? Like, where would you draw the line? Final 2 minutes? Final 5 minutes? Like, what makes one play more important than the other based on time and circumstance? Right? Like, this is going to be really, really hard to navigate. Or isn't it just easier to tell the officials, call penalties when you see penalties, and then we will sort it out later? Should they have picked up the flag? Maybe. I don't know. Like, they could have talked it over. But again, here's why it would have been very difficult to pull the flag. Based on what they said after the game, and I am willing to concede that after the game, they may have formulated their thoughts a little bit more clearer than they were actually on the field. But according to what they said after the game, when the pool reporters talked to them, the officials said, we saw it, we knew it, and we were basically ready to call it. Meaning they went through the whole thing about Kadarius Toney's foot being blocking the football, and they knew they weren't going to warn him. They knew it was offsides, and they knew, let the play roll out, and we're throwing the flag. He's offsides. So instead of cleaning it up at that moment, they said, no, this is too egregious. So they knew that was going to be a penalty. So imagine you're an official. You see Kadarius Toney's foot way over the line, or over the football, and you can't see the football, and you know he's offsides. And you've got your hand on the flag ready to throw it. The ball is hiked, you throw the flag. Then it results in this incredible play. This incredible play. And the place is going nuts, and you just witness, again, the play of the year. And you pick up the flag, and you talk it over with the officials, and the conversation goes like this. Hey, it really didn't affect this, and this is pretty amazing, and this is going to affect the game, and we gave people entertainment. Let's pocket this thing and go. And then allow the video to be shown over and over again of Kadarius Toney being offsides and then wondering what in the world were the officials talking about without throwing, because they did throw the flag. Now, if they didn't throw the flag, it's just simply a missed call and we all live with it. But because they threw the flag, do we really want a conversation about time and circumstance? I said it at the Super Bowl. Do you really want officials deciding games on time and circumstance? This is a penalty in the first quarter, the second quarter, maybe all of the third, maybe three quarters of the fourth. But in the final 2 minutes, it's free for all. Do anything you want. Grab a guy, throw him to the ground. It doesn't matter. We just don't want penalties to affect the game. Or do you want the game to be somewhat orderly and have some level of control? And I think the officials who threw that flag on Kadarius Toney knew exactly why they did it and had to go through with it, because if they didn't, holy cow, can you imagine the conspiracy talk? By the way, there was conspiracy talk anyway. They always are. This whole league now is filled with people who think these games are being manipulated from a control room somewhere else. It's crazy. It's crazy. But it did take away what I thought was such a brilliant play. Travis Kelce's awareness, his ability to stop and throw a perfect pass. It was so remarkable. It is an out-of-your-seat kind of moment. And yet, it was taken back because of a penalty of a couple of toes ahead of a football. It really was. That was tough to take.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we've got a lot more to get to in Week 14 in the NFL. In fact, we've got some stuff tonight. Two games on Monday Night Football. And by the way, pick your poison, take your pick. You've got Dolphins and the Tennessee Titans on one hand, the New York Giants and the Minnesota Vikings on the Green Bay Packers on the other hand. Take your pick. The Packers and the Dolphins, they have a lot to play for. I mean, the Dolphins obviously want to secure a number one seed, so they want to keep up with the Ravens. And the Packers at 6-6 are kind of hot right now, and they're trying to get into the playoff picture in the NFC and stay there. And the Giants, you know, they're 4-8, and the Tennessee Titans, I think, are 4-8 too. They're playing it out. But the two teams are playing against have some things on the line. So bounce back and forth, pick one, go with the other. It's a Monday Night Football doubleheader. We got Shohei Ohtani to get to from news over the weekend. Again, with $700 million, but we've been talking NFL. I want to talk a little bit about my Saturday night, because I really was loving the Army-Navy game. I try to watch the Army-Navy game every year. Sometimes I succeed, sometimes I don't. It's always like a Christmas thing, a company party that my wife's got to go to, so I have to go to, or whatever. But most of the time, I try to watch Army and Navy. I think it's a very special game and a special atmosphere. We closed out on Friday talking to Anthony Pepe live in Boston. And then as I'm watching it, boop, I get the emergency alert system because we've got tornadoes bearing down on us in the Nashville area. And this rest of the game was entirely nothing but weather people in Nashville. And they were doing that sort of scary thing. Now, they were standing on TV and literally, you know, you see like movies like where they use a weather person and the weather person is telling you how dramatic the weather is. Like the weather guy in Nashville was on my TV saying things like, if you're here, get to cover now. Get to cover right now. Like, if you're in this location, and he was pointing to the spot on the map, get underground. Get to your safe space right now. It's coming. It's coming. And it was right in the, like, sort of the northwest part of the city. And we are in the southern part of the city. So we kept watching on the radar to see how it was going to be, if it was going to come down to us. It got a little hairy, but didn't really come down to us. But holy cow, like it was, I didn't know this, but if you see a weather map that's got like all red, I didn't know this. And I've lived in the central Tennessee area for a long time, that if there is a patch of white or a patch of yellow, if you see all red and you see a patch, that's debris that's been picked up. That's where they can find if a tornado is active. And they were like little splotches of this white that were around this area. And it just hit Clarksville. It hit a number of cities. So I didn't get to see the end of the Army-Navy game. But you know what? I mean, I'm glad we're on the weather and paying attention to it. It was pretty dramatic. But I heard that, well, I watched some video later, like of the game, but the Army made a great stop at the goal line. Navy was trying to go for the touchdown. They made a great stop, and then they got the ball, and then they took a safety to, like, sort of end the game, which was pretty awesome. Like, you don't see that strategic level before, but it's a safe way to make sure you don't turn the ball over on the snap, you don't get sacked and maybe lose the ball and it'd be a touchdown. They took a safety, but it affected the over-under of the game. It was a bad beat, if you will, because I guess the over-under was 27.5, and this made the score 17-11. So that's how Army-Navy came to an end. But always great. At least I got to see the beginning of the game and the pageantry of the game and everything. It's one of the more electric atmospheres in college football. So at least I got to see part of that. But NFL Week 14, it's about two stories. It's about the Dallas Cowboys beating the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday night. And now what do we do with this? What do we do with the Cowboys? Like, if it was stock, would you be buying it? Would you hold on to it? What would you do? Because every Cowboy fan I know is like, I've seen this before. And then we get to the playoffs and we lose to, like, whoever. Whether it was San Francisco twice or in Dak's first year after taking over for Romo, Green Bay at home. I mean, how confident would you be as a Cowboy fan? You now lead the division. You've now rolled over everybody that you've played since losing to San Francisco. They are killing people at home. I think the Seattle game was probably the closest that we've seen. And here's the other part with the Cowboys. So Thanksgiving, three games ago, they beat Washington. They had a nice back-and-forth game against Seattle on a Thursday night last week, and then they rolled over Philadelphia. These are three nationally televised games. These are three, this is the only thing you're watching in the National Football League games. So America has gotten to see Dallas play its best football right now. Now, don't get me wrong, they get on TV all the time on the late Sunday game. But as the isolated game where the whole country can watch, this is back. This is three times that America has gotten to see Dak Prescott and the Cowboys put on a show. And now what do we do with this? As I've said before, the narrative on Dak Prescott's done. I'm done. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear your top 30 quarterbacks and Dak is 58. I don't want to hear it anymore. I'm done with that. I'm done with that nonsense. I was done with that nonsense years ago, but I was done with that nonsense of this clickbait. He's not even a third stringer. He's not even my third team, that kind of level. I hate it. Dak Prescott's playing good football right now. There was a lot to pick on before, but he had this raw talent that needed to be refined, and it's being refined. His footwork's great. He throws in tight windows. He's completely confident. He's running this offense. He's solid in the pocket. He is running this offense. Do we take that currency to the end of the season and think this team is going to the Super Bowl? I'd like to think so, but I always feel like this might be the best iteration of what Dak Prescott has had in a long time.
I don't think you can say he's taking him to the Super Bowl until, I don't know, I mean, has Dak played in the NFC Championship game?
No, Cowboys have not been in the NFC title game since 1995.
Okay.
The last time they went to the Super Bowl.
And so,
it's always been the divisional round or wild card round.
Get there. They look good. I'll say that. I mean, they look good. They look good last night.
Get to the championship game?
I mean, yeah, I right now, if I had to pick my, if I had to make my pick between which two NFC teams will meet, I'm going to say Cowboys Niners.
So let's go back to the 49er game back on October 8th. They've only had one loss, and that loss against the Eagles is the game where everybody pointed to the mistakes Dallas made rather than what the Eagles did.
Right.
So you're talking about a five-game win streak. It's eight games in which Dallas is 7-1, and the one loss is a game they should have won. So
yeah.
It's a fantastic run. But again, they've got two games. They've got to go on the road against Buffalo. They've got to go on the road against Miami. These are back-to-back games. And if they were to lose these two games, road games against teams, especially one in Buffalo that is now
desperate.
Feeling like they are desperate enough to do everything, then you're going back to a conversation about the Cowboys, about, I don't know if I can trust them. I don't know if I believe in them. But I'm wondering if people are having it still, watching the amazingness of this team and still going, yeah, but when the postseason starts, we've seen the same act before. How many times have we gotten high on the Dallas Cowboys only to be let down in the playoffs? It's legit. It's legit. I mean, listen, I hope they give, if they play San Francisco, I hope they give them a run for their money. I really do. I hope so. If they have to play them for the third straight year, I hope so. But I don't know. I don't know. But what they did to the Eagles last night, I mean, they messed around with the Eagles, slapped them around, and threw them in the garbage. They got to Jalen Hurts all night long. That was a really efficient, efficient game by Dallas last night. Really efficient. It's impressive to watch Dak continue to be confident enough to, like, you know, he kept saying, hey, this is a big game. This is a very important game for you. People were calling it a must win, using that term loosely, but he not only got the job done, they were in complete control of the game. Complete control of the game. But we'll see. Next week against Miami and the week after, I mean, we have Buffalo, and then the week after on Christmas Eve against Miami, we'll see. We'll see if those two things play out. And then they got a Detroit team at home that's really not going anywhere. I mean, Detroit lost to the Bears over the weekend, but they're still tough.
Then that game, I mean, when you were mentioning Cowboys still have to face Bills and Dolphins, I stopped myself. I was like, oh, don't forget the Lions.
But it
was
like, the Lions are at home.
I know, but what I was saying was, you know, when you were talking about, like, you know, you're hinting at tough games ahead of them, I don't know if the Lions are going to be tough against the Cowboys.
They might. They still might. Listen, I don't take temperatures week to week. Sometimes you have bad games. They had a bad game against the Bears. But they're capable of playing well. They had a really bad game against the Bears, but they're still 9-4. They've just lost two of their last three. So, but I don't know. Maybe they will. But I think the two road games against AFC opponents, especially in two pretty dramatic climate changes,
yeah,
from what could be in December in Buffalo and December in Miami in back to back weeks.
Quite what the Chargers had to go through.
No.
Back, really, no, back way, way, way back in the day.
Hot and humid in the freezer bowl in Cincinnati. So,
but it could be similar. It could be close.
Yeah, this is the time of year. I mean, this is now hitting, five more games left in the season? Four for teams? Four more games before we get done?
Yeah.
And the AFC is just completely fun. I mean, it's loaded.
Oh, my God.
Loaded.
I think there's still 10 teams that really have a shot. Like,
finally,
really.
The New England Patriots got eliminated yesterday, finally, because the Cincinnati Bengals won their game against Indianapolis. Great. All right, we do have to switch to baseball.
Were you a little surprised that it took them this long?
Yeah, right. It took December to take a 2-10, you know, what was a 2-10 team prior to Thursday night's game eliminated from the playoffs? Yeah. Completely. We got to get to baseball. Shohei Ohtani, $700 million from the Dodgers. That was the big news on Saturday. We will continue your thoughts on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. And then we will get back to the NFL in week 14.
This is Wake Up Call, the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call. So we got a lot of football to get to, but man, Saturday night, Shohei Ohtani, that ended up being the big news of the evening as he lands a 10-year deal with the Dodgers for $700 million. Like, this is $200 million more than I thought he would potentially get, but was willing to take less because he's not going to pitch in 2024.
Yeah, it was $100 million more than I thought.
Thought he was going to still get six?
Yeah, I thought he was still going to get six.
Well, when these guys all bid against each other, you're right. It probably gets a little too crazy.
You know, because we rationalized, you and I talked about it ad nauseum, was that, you know, yeah, you would spend, you know, 300 plus for a good hitter. You would spend 300 plus for a good pitcher.
Right.
I did not see $700 million. Did anyone see $700
million? $700 million is so out of the realm of where people thought this was going to go. Like, it really is. I mean, you're right. It's $100 million more than the maximum you probably would figure a team would be willing to go.
Right.
Right? I mean, like, $70 million a year on average. Now, granted, this money is deferred and all that stuff. They've worked out some numbers for it. I get it. But if you just want to simplify it for people, it's a $70 million contract.
$70 million a year contract. Yeah.
And it just takes it to another place. But, and I think this is where baseball is smart, because they had, and again, Shohei Ohtani's agent, I know he's kind of criticized or how he went about it in the secretive way. Anybody who talked about it kind of heard the wrath of their camp. But he had a unique player. He had a player that no one else, there is no other baseball player that baseball is now protected. If they want to protect themselves from themselves, from giving any more than that to any player that can't do what Shohei Ohtani can do, right? So you can be a fantastic hitter. You can be a Bryce Harper, Aaron Judge level hitter. And you can't justify giving that person $70 million a year because he can't pitch.
At least for another 20 years.
Yeah, likewise. Right. But if anyone thinks that like Mike Trout can go renegotiate his contract, I mean, no. This is on another level because this guy is a dual purpose player that is outstanding at both the things that he does.
I think what we should compare it to, it's the opposite of Deshaun Watson getting a guaranteed contract.
Yeah, right.
In the sense that he got the guaranteed contract. There was no owner out there going, that was stupid. They all were saying it. And now with this, all the owners are like, okay, good. I'm glad you sent the benchmark at this. Because this is a dual threat player. We don't have, can you name any other dual threat players out there?
No. And the next one that comes will take a couple of years to showcase what he can do. And then you're talking years and years into the future. The fifth highest paid, contract that has been ever given in Major League Baseball was Manny Machado at $350 million. He is behind Aaron Judge at 360, Mookie Betts at 365, and Mike Trout at 426 and a half. Manny Machado has got the fifth largest contract in baseball. That is half of what Shohei Ohtani got. Half. And what Manny Machado got his, what, last year or year before? Just a year. I mean, that was the fourth biggest one, right? Before it became the fourth biggest one before the signing of Shohei Ohtani, or before the agreement of Shohei Ohtani over the weekend. This is absolutely crazy. But again, you're right. The Dodgers are paying $350 million for a pitcher, and they're paying $350 million for a hitter at $35 million apiece, and a guy's expected to do two jobs.
Yeah.
And when he's not pitching, he's supposed to hit. And when he's pitching, he's supposed to hit.
No, so. He's going to be a DH.
Yep.
You know, I mean, and then, he'll be... You know, probably there will be times where I think we thank God the National League does have a DH now, or else this, I don't think this deal works at all.
Well, the National League always had the DH.
No, the American League always had the DH.
No, the National League had the DH. The American League had the designated hitter. Now it's all, they all have the designated hitter.
No,
the National League always had the DH.
National League always had a DH.
No. I'm sorry. What are we talking about? We're going in another direction. No, the National League has the DH.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was thinking it was the other way around. I'm sorry. My bad.
Yeah. No, the National League is new with the DH. I mean, they just got it last year. And so now this deal will never have worked for the Dodgers or any other National League team because I don't see Shohei being an everyday player, you know, and he can't play every single day and then pitch. This does make me nervous, though.
Why does it make you nervous?
In the sense that I'm feeling he might be a little injury prone when it comes to pitching.
So
is it money well spent? I mean, I'm excited. Don't worry. I got my Dodger. I got my Tupac Dodger shirt on today to, strut around the studio here.
But let's talk about this. Why are you nervous about the money?
Well, no, I'm nervous about the money because did they overspend on someone who may not be able to pitch down the road?
Do you worry about that with a team in a sport that doesn't have a salary cap?
That's true.
The Dodgers can spend anything they want. They can borrow money against what they are, and they can spend whatever they want. If there is a free agent 3 years from now that the Dodgers want, they can afford them because they are going to be loaded with cash. And since there's no regulatory agency other than the luxury cap that can tell them they can't spend, it's not like the NBA or the NFL where if you overspend on a wide receiver, it's going to affect your offensive line. This is what I was talking about yesterday with the Steelers. People want to know why the Steelers suck. The Steelers stink because their money is going into the defense. They've spent a lot of money on defense, and they can't afford good offensive linemen. They can't afford the good offensive players that they want to get. In baseball, here's the thing. There's a return here that's coming to the Dodgers. There's a massive return here. It's not just ticket sales. It's everything that the Dodgers are going to be for the next 10 years with this guy. This guy, here's what the Dodgers bought for $700 million besides the talent on the field.
Japan.
They bought Japan. They bought the entire country of Japan. They bought the entire country of their fan base. This is exponential what Ichiro did for the Seattle Mariners.
Yep.
This is rights deals that they can negotiate. This is merchandise they can negotiate. He is going to be the Japanese ambassador for the Dodgers for the rest of his life. Fernando Valenzuela did this for Mexico.
Yep.
Like they have a guy now that will be as long he may pitch. This takes him until what? 39 years old? Something like that?
Because he's 20, right? I believe he's
29 years old. Mm-hmm. It's going to take him to close to 40, which means if he plays 1 year with the Reds because he's kind of a washed up player, who cares? This guy is going to wear Dodger blue at Dodger functions for the rest of his existence. He is the ambassador to that country that is baseball crazy. So everything, the Dodgers are getting a boatload of money that's going to be coming in based on his existence on their team. It's financially a lot of money. I mean, it's a lot of money. I don't know how to process it, to be honest with you.
I don't either.
Like it's
nearly $750 million.
Like it's so like I thought guys signing $300 million contracts were like
was ridiculous.
Was crazy. and now it's that plus money.
Well, I mean,
double that plus $100 million.
We're almost 20 years removed from when A-Rod signed his $250 million contract, right?
Yeah, well, you're right. Yeah,
we're about 20 years removed. That's why I said, you know, it'll probably be another 20 years until we surpass 700. Because I'll never forget when A-Rod signed that. We all sat there like that is the craziest thing I've ever heard.
But I think you and I touched on this over the summer when we were talking about Shohei, which was if baseball is looking for if the owners are looking for a salary cap, this is how you do it. This is how you do it. You find a unicorn like Shohei Ohtani that can pitch Cy Young level baseball, hit like an MVP, and then you pay him $70 million, and then nobody gets near $70 million. Nobody ever. I don't care who they are. You need the one team that sets the bar that says we're not talking about a pitcher that can hit occasionally. Like we've seen good hitters, you know, pitchers who can hit every now and then.
Yeah,
right? Madison Bumgarner is one. We are talking about an MVP at the plate and a Cy Young pitcher on the mound. And then you say to every single player that's as the years click and money gets a little more and guys are making 35, 40 million, 45 million. Yeah. We're never going near 70. So that just stops right now.
Well, I mean, that's why I brought up A-Rod, because when A-Rod signed that contract, it was $25 million a year. And we all said no one's ever going to touch that. And right. No one did for a long time.
That's right.
For a long time. Now a $250 million deal seems like a bargain. And I can't imagine 20 years from now, you and I will be sitting here going, man, $70 million a year, that's a bargain.
Right. I mean, again, it's to this unbelievably unique player. And if you gave me five guesses on what that number was, I wouldn't have gone to $700 million. I would have... 625 was probably I would be like, I don't know, 550, 490, like whatever. $700 million, it's like they crumpled up all of the expectations and went, we're going to start on a fresh piece of paper with a 7.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue. It's Wake Up Call. So, again, Shohei Ohtani to the Dodgers. So, I mean, yeah, I have fun with that for the next decade. Have fun with Shohei Ohtani.
No, I mean, this is what we were saying last week. You know, the Dodgers did not do anything during the offseason, this past offseason. This is what they were prepping for. This is what they were laying down everything for, was to make this big splash. I was actually surprised that it came sooner than later. for whatever reason, I thought it was going to be, I don't know, it was going to be like a January type of deal. Even though I know that they need to get it done quick, you know, soon. Yeah. But I thought Shohei was going to, you know, entertain all the dinners.
Yeah, why not?
You know,
including from like the Tampa Bay Rays.
Exactly. I mean, we've talked about that before. It's like, yeah, you know what? Have the owner take you out to a nice restaurant. You may not sign with the team.
The Rays owner is like, we can give you two coupons to fish fry night. And also, maybe we can get you a car. Not used, of course, but maybe a car. Does that work for you?
Do you think Tampa's pitch would have included, hey, even though we don't have a stadium yet, we'll put a statue up of you?
Right. Yeah. I mean, has Tampa Bay spent $700 million in the last 10 years on the whole roster?
No. In fact, there was one that was showed eight teams whose annual salary that they dish out to their players was less than Shohei's.
See, that is, I will say, that is quite unfair.
Yeah.
That is a little crazy, right? Like, it really does make you go, oh, my God, he's just – have these arguments all the time when I was in Colorado with the Rockies. I'm like, why are we, you know, like the Rockies, I'm like, why are we a farm system for the Red Sox and the Dodgers and the Yankees? Develop these players that they can't afford and they ship out of town. And that's it. Monday Night Football tonight, Tennessee taking on Miami. A sad note, Frank Wycheck passed away yesterday. If you don't know who Frank Wycheck is, he played for the Oilers and was on the team when they moved to Memphis, then to Nashville. But he was also instrumental in the Music City Miracle. The Music City Miracle was the playoff game against the Buffalo Bills with 16 seconds on the clock. Wycheck was the player that threw the lateral pass, very similar to, not quite similar, because Kelsey's actually was massively backwards. This one was really close. Like, he threw it almost straight, but it did land in the arms of Kevin Dyson behind the point in which Wycheck threw the ball. It's been analyzed like a Zapruder film by Buffalo fans over and over again as to actually where Dyson caught the pass. But Wycheck was the player that threw it, and Dyson ran it in for a touchdown. Mike Keith, who's been on the show before, he's the voice of the Tennessee Titans, had a very famous call of this where he screamed at the top of his lungs as Dyson was crossing the line, and there are no flags on the field! And the Titans won the game. He passed away yesterday, or Saturday, I believe. Hit his head. He was only 52 years old. He hit his head. He was a radio personality in the city. And they found him unconscious the next day. Head injuries are bad. He left the radio business because of various head injuries that he suffered during football and just kind of retired to his home in Chattanooga. But Frank Wycheck passed away at the age of 52, which is relatively young, 52. Nevertheless, the Titans are playing Miami tonight in Miami, and the Giants take on Jordan Love and the Green Bay Packers, who are hot. They've won 4 of 5, and Love is protecting the football. He's thrown some touchdowns, very few turnovers in the last few games. Really has turned the ship around for the Packers, who are trying to hang around in the playoff hunt. The Denver Broncos, as I mentioned yesterday, they beat the Chargers, and Easton Stick got to play for the Chargers.
Easton Stick? Who's Easton Stick?
I love Easton Stick. What a name. How fun is Easton Stick that he's playing football?
And he didn't do too terrible yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, for what the Chargers are allowing their quarterbacks to do this year.
If I was the Chargers, I would shut Herbert down and I'd make the team attractive to whoever wants to coach it next year.
Yep.
I'd say clean up the money, tighten it all up, rest Herbert, make him healthy, and then say, guys, we are up for who wants to be the coach of the Chargers, and then do it that way. And then, you know, shut it down. But the Broncos, 24-7 now, and Vance Joseph is getting the last laugh on everybody. Right? That defensive coordinator. Denver, they're tightening up that defense. I don't know if they'll catch Kansas City. I don't know. I mean, you know, I still am not a – I believe in Denver, but give me any week, and I'm like, I could see them lose as I can see them win. But they're 7-6. There are a bunch of teams at 7-6. They got to go to Detroit. They're playing a lousy New England team. They'll get the Chargers again at home, and they'll play a Vegas team that is absolutely terrible. Vegas and Minnesota should be fined. What's that thing in soccer? Deregulation? What is that called?
Regulation?
Regulation. Yeah. Those two teams are embarrassing.
Yeah, that was a bleep show.
That was 3-0 inside.
Yeah.
Indoors.
I said, you know, I told you before the show, I said, you had an awesome tweet.
So the last 3-0 game in the NFL was between Miami and Pittsburgh in 2007 at Heinz Field. And there was a couple of reasons behind it. It was a Monday Night Football game. Mike Tirico was on the call of it. And they played a state championship game, series of state championship games at Heinz Field on Friday. And it was, by the way, it was wet weather all weekend. So they played four games on Friday. Then they played it was in November. So they're playing Pitt. Pitt played, I forget who it was, but Pitt played on Saturday. So what the Steelers did was they said, well, we're going to put new sod down. So we got kind of a beat up field from four high school football games and the Pitt game. We're going to put new sod down. The problem was it was raining, and it was raining pretty heavy. So the sod didn't settle. And they tried as best they could, but it was sloshy. It was like there was like a level of water underneath the sod. So players were really careful. They couldn't go full speed. It was raining. Almost 2 inches of rain fell on the game. This is the game, if many of you remember, you might have seen a video of this, or you may have remembered watching it live. This is where a punt landed like a 9-iron and like stuck in the ground. The ball landed and just kind of stuck into the ground, if you remember that one. That's the game. So you can completely understand the Steelers winning on a chippy field goal on a game when no one could score. No one could move the ball. It was horrible. It was one of those games everybody talked about it afterwards about how much, like Joey Porter at the time was playing for the Dolphins. He was playing against the Steelers, and he was, you know, it was just a mess, complete disaster. That's a game you expect 3-0. Inside Acushnet Stadium, 3-0, last second field goal or end late in the fourth quarter field goal wins it for Minnesota. That's it. And you know, I feel bad for Antonio Pierce, because Antonio Pierce is now not likely to get that job that I was hoping he would get.
Yeah.
But now the Raiders are spiraling out of control. Now the Raiders are losing games, and that's not a way to impress your boss when you're at home, even with Aiden O'Connell, you lose 3-0. 3-0. Now it's three straight losses. First one was a tight, you know, they played well against Miami but lost. Played Kansas City. And then they lose, they get the bye week, they come back from the bye week, and that's what they display, a 3-0 setback to Minnesota in the stadium. Yuck. And now they're 5-8, and you're 5-8 in the AFC, you're not getting into the playoffs. You're going to need a lot of work. I couldn't believe the Joe Flacco story coming out of Cleveland. That guy was on his couch watching television a couple of weeks ago. Now he's got 5 touchdown passes in 2 games.
And go. Why shouldn't we not think the Browns are going to make the playoffs?
Right, right. They're 8-5. They are the top AFC wild card team.
I mean, are they playing better with Flacco than with Watson?
Right. I know.
That's a serious question.
That is a serious question.
I feel like it's a joke. If we had said that at the beginning of the season, we'd be like, what?
That's crazy.
But yeah, I mean, Flacco, the lone anomaly, we always bring up. The only time we ever bring up Flacco is that it's the one face in the 20-year span of AFC quarterbacks to go to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
It's the one
Brady
face.
Manning, Roethlisberger, and Flacco.
Flacco.
Flacco threw 3 touchdowns against the Jaguars.
Feel like you could do it again, right? Like,
yeah.
Brady Manning, Roethlisberger, Mahomes, Flacco.
I always like these stories. I love these stories about players that were just like gardening or hanging around watching TV or coaching their son's soccer team, and the phone rings. And they're like, hey, you want to play? And they're like, sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
I got a quarter left in me.
Dust off the old cleats. And then there's the wife going, you're too old, but this is my last shot at a dream. Why can't you just stay? Why can't we be your dream? It's not complete. You're going to Cleveland. Why?
I can see him going to his wife. Wife, do you know where my cleats are? Yes, they're in your memory box in the attic.
Exactly. You put it all away. He's out there throwing 300 yards. He threw for 311 and 3 touchdowns and an interception. Lead the Cleveland Browns to a 31-27 victory. They're not only in the playoff hunt, they're really controlling the wild card now.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. They are the top wild card team in the AFC.
You want to know how bad it is? All right, I'm going to talk fantasy football with you real quick, because I helped my son out with his team, right? I told him to bench Njoku because Flacco was quarterback. And I said,
yeah.
I was like, you know what? Hey, he had a decent game last week. He's not going to put 2 in a row. Oops.
Steelers, Colts, Texans, Broncos, Bengals, Bills. All of those are 7-6. For right now, today, 2 slots. All fighting the 2 slots, because the Browns at 8-5 have the 1 slot at number 5. in the AFC. Wild stuff for this league. They've really spread it around.